Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation. Today is a landmark day in so many ways. The most important way it's a landmark day is that the so-called Supreme Court of the state of California weighed same-sex marriage ban. In other words, a few judges decided whether or not to listen to the 7 million people who said no to homosexual marriage. We passed Proposition 8 in November, which said that marriage shall be between a man and a woman. And thousands of homosexuals were out in the streets trying to intimidate voters with their marching and their banging and their yelling. And shockingly, the Attorney General of the state of California, Jerry Brown, has come out not for the law, but for the homosexual rights group, which is astounding when he, considering the mayor wants to be governor. I really don't know what he's thinking because the people have spoken. I want to remind you that it passed by 52%. Now, many of you say, well, That's not a big victory. Well, Obama won by, what, 52%? And you tell us it was a mandate for change? Well, I'm telling you that 52% of the voters said no to homosexual marriage. So you can't have it both ways. That's number one. What's not surprising is that any Newsom, the mayor of our fair city, San Francisco, would come out so vociferously in favor of gay marriage when he also wants to be governor and the people have said no to this. And I want to remind you that the numbers are astonishing. 7 out of 10 blacks. Now, the black folks in California overwhelmingly voted for Obama. They're overwhelmingly voting liberal, 95%. And yet 7 out of 10 black folks said no to gay marriage. 9 out of 10 Chinese voters said no to gay marriage. Now, the gay community was shocked by these numbers. They assumed that by using the specious argument, I would say fallacious argument, that being gay is gay marriage is a civil right, and that being gay is equivalent to being black. They thought that would appeal to black people. It didn't. In fact, most black people find that offensive. They really ought to do their homework and their grassroots work a little more carefully. So that's a big story. And I listened to the arguments today. It was stirring. In fact, I ran it live on michaelsavage.com while it was being run. I was amazed listening to the arguments. I was impressed by some of the arguments and the questions raised by some of the Supreme Court justices. I was equally impressed by Kenneth Starr's brilliant work in that Kenneth Starr represented the people in defending Proposition 8. And we're going to play some of that sound for you, but I want to ask you to call me on one fundamental question today on the Savage Nation, which is this. Do you care about gay marriage or homosexual marriage? I don't know which side you're on. I don't care. Which side are you on? Do you care about homosexual marriage? And if so, why? Why is this important to you, both pro and con? I'd like you to air your positions here on the show, and the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Now, I can see right now that most of you don't care about gay marriage. I know that most of you care about your next paycheck and where it's going to be coming from, if it's coming at all. You care about the power grab by the Obama kingdom that's emerging. I mean, did you know what's going on with Obama? Are you aware of what he's doing? Are you aware that the neo-Marxists around him are trying to grab power the way Chavez did in Venezuela, but at a more rapid rate? Now, I've covered this for the last few days. I think you should pay close attention to what is going on inside the Obama regime, because it's shocking to believe he's getting away with what he's getting away with. I don't think you understand this. But it's a nightmare to watch that Chavez is seizing companies in Venezuela. Remember, Chavez didn't do this overnight. Chavez did this after many years. Chavez, the dictator, the socialist dictator of Venezuela, took a long time to get control of things and take control of the media. Obama's trying to do it in 100 days. And, of course, you should know this. It's very important that you do know this. People are catching on, but apparently not at a fast enough rate. They're also worried about the Boy Scout, or shall I call him a Cub Scout, without honor, the Treasury Secretary, Timothy Geithner, who looks increasingly like a Cub Scout without any patches. It's astounding to watch this doofus who's running the most powerful economy in the world right now, at least the treasury of this economy. There are some other stories. President Obama's czar system concerns some. That's from the LA Times up on my website. Super aids for health, the economy, energy, and urban issues, with more to come, prompt lawmakers and groups to worry he may be concentrating power and bypassing Congress. Of course he is. He's a fascist. I know that you don't want to hear this, but the man is a neo-Marxist fascist dictator in the making. He is not using his fascism yet because he doesn't have enough power to wield the fascist instruments of power. But he is aggrandizing enough power to become a very dangerous president, and you must understand this is an important story. There's another weird story, and it's sickening. The man who beheaded a bus passenger has been found not criminally responsible in Canada. He cut a man up on a bus for no reason, and the sick courts in Canada said that although he cut the man up, he cut up a carnival worker, Tim McLean. He was on his way home to see his mom and dad when he was cut to pieces by a Chinese immigrant, Mr. Lee. Where's this? What's his name? Vince Lee has been found not criminally responsible for the unprovoked killing and beheading of fellow passenger Timothy McLean on a Greyhound bus last summer. They said he was mentally ill at the time. Lee had pleaded not guilty to a charge of second-degree murder. Psychiatric evidence suggested he is a schizophrenic. Well, let me ask you, who would cut someone's head off on a bus other than a crazy person? Does that give him a pass? To me, they should execute the guy within 30 days. Did you know that for 5 hours after the killing, Vincent Lee wandered around on the bus defiling the body? Did you know any of this? Did you know that they found inside the man's, I can't even tell you what they found inside him. During the five-hour standoff, Vince Lee walked around the bus carrying the severed head in one hand, the knife in the other. At one point, he threw McLean's head into the bus's stairwell. Now, they found on him the man's ear, his tongue, and his fingers. I want to ask you something. If somebody commits a crime as horrible as this, shouldn't they be executed for it to send the message to others who may or may not be crazy that they're going to suffer if they do it? I would bring back hanging, frankly. Something not pretty. Not surrounded with liberals crying for them, bringing them low main. This is disgusting. Vincent Lee, to me, you know, I need a breather from this. This Vincent Lee story has gotten me. Play some rock and roll.
1, 2, 3, hey. Look at Mr. Lee. 3, 4, 5, hey. Look at him jive.
Psychiatric evidence in his trial suggested that Lee is a schizophrenic who suffered a major psychotic episode when he cut up Mr. McLean, ate some of the body parts, and cut off McLean's head. How would you like to be Tim McLean's mother and watch this trial, this just abridgment of any justice, of any standards, saying he was schizophrenic, he was mentally ill, they're going to put him in a mental hospital. Do you understand that this man is going to get out of this mental hospital very soon? Do you understand that when he gets out, he's going to be a crazed murderer again? My only prayer is that he does not do this to one of the judges in Canada. That's my only prayer. Now, we'll go back to the bigger story, which is homosexual marriage, in a moment. But before we take our first break here on the show, I want to play a brilliant statement by one of the California Supreme Court justices, Joyce Kinnaird, in clip two. Listen to her question. Wait, she's questioning the bumbling fool that Jerry Brown sent up there. I never saw such a bad lawyer in my life. Some portly idiot who couldn't even get a job in talk radio as a disc jockey is getting up there and he's saying things to the justices when they ask him questions such as, well, you know, things like that. Now listen to Joyce Kinnaird, Supreme Court Justice, as she challenges him.
The people established the Constitution. As judges, our power is very limited, and I would like to hear from you why this court can willy-nilly disregard the will of the people to change the state constitution, as they have done in the past.
First, Your Honor is picking up on intervener.
I don't want to hear the doofus. I can tell you this, if I needed a lawyer, I wouldn't hire the doofus Jerry Brown hired. I can guarantee you that. Is that all the state can afford is this moron bumbler? I'll be right back.
Savage.
Proposition 8 is not just about the rights of gays and lesbians to marry. It creates a radically new rule that political majorities can deprive targeted minorities of fundamental rights.
At Proposition 8A, my hypothetical next proposition, 8A said that marriage is only between a white and a white and a black, going back to the pre-Perez Sharp era, putting aside the U.S. Constitution and Loving and all that, just concentrating on the state constitution. Prop 8A says that. Sharp is back. Pre-Sharp, Perez versus Sharp is back. It's only a nomenclature. We can have a black having a domestic partnership relationship with another black. They have the same rights. They just can't marry a white. That's what we're dealing with.
That's utter nonsense, Pierre, that would prohibit marriage between a white and a black. Now, they know that that's a truly specious argument because such a proposal would never make it through the first rung of the very rigorous ballot initiative process. They understand that. And this is, again, a classic example of the propaganda being used by the homosexual lobby in order to sway the voter into thinking that they're a minority being deprived rights and they're just like a black being deprived of rights. It's utter nonsense. And I don't think it held water with the Supreme Court justices today, incidentally. Did we have an answer to that one? I don't know if we did have an answer to that from any of the justices. The phone number, though, if you care to comment on this or any of the other previous ones, is 1-800-449-8255. Once again, I am open for business, but unfortunately, once again, I'm having trouble getting my callers up. Once again, it's a rough weather or something like that, and you'll have to bear with me as I try to get my callers up. Apparently, my marvelous staff is. Let's see if this works. And there we have callers. 1-800-449-8255. In Washington, D.C., we have a caller on the gay marriage issue, and I've asked you again, whichever side you stand, to make a presentation that's rational. But you're going to get an argument from me one way or the other, just as there were arguments today on both sides by the Supreme Court justices. I was amazed at how intelligent the arguments were, with the exception of this two you just heard, that of a hypothetical proposition for the ballot that would allow voters to define marriage as a union between a white or a black and a black. It would never pass even the first rung of the rigorous ballot initiative process, and everyone knows that. Jim in Washington, WTNT, go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael, I'm a gay guy. I live in Washington, D.C. I don't agree with gay marriage. I just don't.
Well, I don't think you're alone, Jim, and I'll tell you, I'm not going to tell you anything. You tell me why.
I am a Christian, but I believe in the Bible, and the Bible does say that a marriage is between a man and a woman. I believe that it is a religious institution that needs to be decided by the churches, not by the state.
The best argument I've heard against homosexual marriage is that the traditional family, which is the brick of civilization, is in so much trouble as it is. The last thing this weak institution of traditional marriage needs is the final kick in the pants. In other words, why must the gay movement be so aggressive that it must encroach upon the fundamental beliefs of a society? Isn't it enough that gays have all the freedoms that they've ever dreamed of? You know, I'm an older guy, Jim. I grew up a long time ago. And I watched the gay people in the country go from being hidden in closets and hidden in nightclubs that were hidden. The police had to be paid off for gays to go to a nightclub in New York, all the way through the Stonewall riots, all the way through the period that we're living in today. You know, there's a point, though, at which the people have say, why must you encroach upon what is to us a sacred bond? Why must you demand that as well? I think that's what the issue is for me.
Well, Michael, I think they're fighting for the wrong thing. I think the gay community is fighting for the wrong thing. I think like I said, that marriages are religious. If they want the rights that go with marriage, don't term it marriage, term it civil union or whatever. Fight for that, the legality of if you're...
Level with me, because I don't really understand this. I've had gay friends across the years. I don't currently have any. I live more or less a hermit's life, and I'm only relating to my family and a few other people, but I never knew gay people who wanted to be married, Jim. I knew gay men who were in relationships with another guy for a long period. They didn't run around, for example. They never wanted to be married. The guys I knew who went that way, the last thing they wanted to be was like their father and mother trapped in a domestic bourgeois situation. What is this all about, Jim?
It's an interesting scenario because I have been in a relationship for 12 years. And when you look at certain aspects of relationships, two same-sex people in a relationship, they don't get the same legal benefits in regards to, like, inheritance and...
Well, why not grant all of the legal benefits, all of the other benefits of marriage without having to then create a mockery of marriage, because as anyone who has a logical brain understands that, you know, just because they're religious doesn't mean they're bigots. And just because the religion is interpreted to mean a man and a woman, which it has been from the beginning of recorded history, and that means Christian religion, Jewish religion, Buddhist religion, Muslim religion, the Hindu religion, there's not a religion on earth that doesn't say marriage is between a man and a woman. Why is the gay community so adamant about this?
See, I think they should go the other tact and go to the European version, which is you have to have a civil union in the courthouse. That's what grants you the rights that go with everything else. But leave marriage out of it. Leave it up to the churches to decide whether or not they will perform the marriage.
Well, you're a very enlightened caller, and I really appreciate the lack of rancor between yourself and myself. I really do, because it's the last thing I want people to think is that I have some kind of, you know, hidden agenda or antipathy towards gay people, which I really don't. I myself don't practice that particular way of life. On the other hand, I've met people who are gay. So what? It doesn't mean anything to me. And whatever they are as a human being, they are to me. But when I see the radical gays pushing this agenda, that bothers me. That's what bothers me.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. So today was the big gay marriage day in California because, did we play Gavin Newsom yet? Any Tusum Newsom who has fundamentally made one of the biggest mistakes in the history of politics. Gavin Newsom came out back in May of 2008 with a hoot and a yell that has been heard around the world, and he believes that hoot and yell will carry him to the governorship and then to the presidency. I believe, and I've said it to him, I ran into him in a restaurant a few weeks ago, and I said I think that he undid himself by taking such a strong stand as he did in the following clips. Play it.
What a day in San Francisco! What a day in California! What a day for America! What a day for equality! By the way, as California goes, so goes the rest of the nation. It's inevitable. This door is wide open now. It's going to happen, whether you like it or not. This is the future, and it's now. Courts across this country.
All right. Now, believe Mayor Annie Tusum Newsom is right, that this is inevitable, and whether you like it or not, gay marriage is going to be shoved down your throat by the very small band of radicals who want to not only dilute the word marriage itself, but alter the whole fundamental meaning of the word marriage? And does it matter to you? Does it matter to you or not? Joe in Austin, Texas. Go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike. I'm a fiscal conservative, but I am pretty social liberal, I guess. I don't really care about gay marriage at all, and I see that as being a big issue that's dividing the conservative party right now. I think there's a lot of people. I'm 31. I think there's a lot of younger people that agree with the fiscal responsibility issue and things like that, but just don't really care about gay marriage and those issues, and I think it's really creating a divide. I just don't think gay marriage is that big of an issue to younger people that maybe know more.
Well, that's because most young people are not family people. They're basically into the orgasmic lifestyle that has been pushed down their throats since they're children. They've been taught to just have a good time and have an orgasm and go on their merry way, which is why men will not commit to women, why they will not be fathers to children, why they will not stick around. That doesn't mean that we have to continue to support this orgasmic lifestyle, does it?
Well, I mean,
In other words, what is the conservative? What does it mean to be a conservative? I mean, what does it mean? To just use the word means nothing. I think most people are fiscal conservatives. So that's irrelevant. I think what's important is to define what a conservative means. I think you'd start with the social element of being a conservative, and that means supporting traditional family values. I don't see how you can see it any other way.
Mm-hmm. I just think a lot of young people, I mean, I don't want to see second graders being taught that there's, you know, father and father and mother and stuff like that. So there's a fine line, you know.
Here's my position in clear terms. I don't think anyone can understand this unless they have children. I truly don't. I think that people who have not had children, raised children, can understand what we're talking about when we say we don't want our children brainwashed. Let me explain why. At age 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, when they're being brainwashed about the wonders of the gay lifestyle, children don't even understand sexuality. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
They don't know what sex is. You brainwash the child when they're 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 into thinking they might be gay. When the teachers start brainwashing them and say, well, you know, you might be gay. What does a kid know what that means? A kid who's 9 years old has no sexual drive at all, generally. So he hangs out with his friends, if he's a boy, with other friends. And they say, well, if you like the company of other boys, you might be gay. What they're doing is brainwashing boys into becoming gay and girls into becoming gay by telling them that. That's outrageous to put that in the children's heads. And you don't understand this until you have children, that you don't want your children to be taken upon by this movement that is brainwashing them, particularly when they're pre-sexual, with sexual ideas. This is a very important point. I wouldn't want the children to be taught about sexuality at all when they're 5, 6, 7, 8, or 9, for example, let alone homosexual choices. How can they make a choice when they don't even know what they are? So a kid who might be slightly effeminate, let's say a boy, for example, is not particularly macho. He doesn't like to play games. He doesn't like to run around in the football field. He likes more sensitive things in his life, and he's sort of effeminate in his voice. Does that mean he's gay? It doesn't mean he's gay at all. But if you start telling a child like that, well, you're probably gay because of the way you are, you take a wonderful person with a great genetic possibility, and you castigate that person into the well of loneliness for the rest of his life. Moreover, you deny that the human gene pool of some very valuable DNA. And I want to keep repeating this. I have said this for 15 years, as long as I'm in the radio. One of the reasons America is suffering right now is because so many people who are gay have not had children. You heard me. That's exactly what I mean, and I want to repeat it. Some of the most wonderful genetic material is going to waste. And I will say that until you finally understand me. You know, in the past, if people had certain inclinations, they usually got married anyway owing to social pressure, and they usually had children anyway owing to social pressure, and they would practice their proclivities on the side. But because the set and the frame of our society has been so altered, where the criminal is now revered more than the cop, where the killer is more revered than the priest, people have come to think that being gay is actually superior to being heterosexual, and not having children is somehow a more advanced way to live. I don't want to go into the details of what I'm saying to you, but I think you get it in broad strokes. And I'll just repeat my main point, is that so many thousands, if not millions, of people who are openly practicing the gay lifestyle and who have condemned themselves to not have children and who have cut off their DNA from the human pool have so denied humanity in so many ways. And I want to say that until you finally understand, it's a loss, in other words. It's a tragic loss to our society and to other societies. And for that reason alone, I would discourage so-called homosexual marriage. And I think I've made a very able point, and I think I made a point in a way that can be taken only in one way, which is a positive way. That's how I see this. 1-800-449-8255. It's an interesting thing in today's court hearing. Came up minutes into the proceedings. The lawyer for the homosexual side was hammered by Chief Justice Ron George, who asked what rights were lost other than being able to label their union as marriage. And the opposing attorney said, relegating same-sex couples to domestic partnership does not provide them with everything but a word. It puts those couples in a second-class status. Now, that's another fallacious argument. It has no meaning whatsoever. Because Justice Joyce Kennard said that the court is being forced to decide between two rights, the right of the people to change the Constitution, as they have done, and the right to marry, which the homosexuals wish to be done. And what the justice said is, what I'm picking up from the oral argument in this case, is this court should willy-nilly disregard the will of the people. In other words, she's breaking it down to what it is. She's saying, you want the right to marry, but you want to deny the people the right to change the Constitution. And you're telling we, the court, to decide for the people. It was an amazing point. Now, do we have any of that on tape, gentlemen? Play it, please.
From the beginnings of our state constitutional history, the right of the people to alter or change the provision of the state constitution has been a basic right, a fundamental right, to use your term, an inalienable right. But us choose between these two rights, the right that you have mentioned to the court, the inalienable right to marry, and the right of the people to change the Constitution as they see fit. And what I'm picking up from the oral argument in this case is that this court should willy-nilly disregard the will of the people.
I thought it was brilliant. Justice Joyce Kennard understands the Constitution and fundamentally said that we are here because of the will of the people. She took the classic conservative point of view, which is that government is appointed by the people as their representatives, not as their rulers. That's something Obama apparently doesn't understand, but we're not going to get into that right now. The homosexual side argued that California voters have an inalienable right, they have an inalienable right to gay marriage, that you can't take away inalienable rights. Well, Kenneth Starr argued the opposite. Do we have Kenneth Starr saying the opposite? Kenneth Starr made an interesting argument today, which is that that the voters have an inalienable right to amend the Constitution, and that taking away rights through the initiative process is not a revision that alters the structure of government. Because the other side kept using the phrase inalienable right, inalienable right, inalienable right. We gays have an inalienable right to marry. You can't take away our inalienable right to marry. So Kenneth Starr said California voters also have an inalienable right, and that is to amend the Constitution. And I don't think they were ready for that. It was pretty interesting. And I want you to hear clip 8 now from Kenneth Starr.
Proposition 8 does not, in fact, erode any of the considerable bundle of rights that this state has very generously provided. It has done what? It has said, and here is the context, we want to restore the traditional definition that has been in place since this state was founded.
There it is. And he was quite eloquent, frankly. And yet on the other side, we had a lumbering, bumbling lawyer for Jerry Brown who made a mockery of the law itself. He didn't know what was going on. He couldn't hold an argument. He kept saying, well, you know. It was kind of embarrassing. He was not a very good lawyer. Why Attorney General Jerry Brown would come out so strongly against the will of the voters is astounding to me. I can't understand what he's thinking. If the man was going to end his career as attorney general, that would be one thing. But here's a man who wants to be governor. You would think that simply from the point of view of his own ambitions, he would understand that when the people vote, they know what they're doing, that they're not that stupid. I can't for the life of me understand why an otherwise intelligent man would take that position. Listen to clip 28.
This afternoon, 28. We filed this very thoughtful and extensive brief. And in it, we argue that the court should strike down Proposition 8. What we're saying is that the people can change the Constitution, but they can't strip away a fundamental liberty unless they can demonstrate a compelling interest. Well, the court has already ruled there is no such compelling interest.
Well, that argument held no water today in the Supreme Court. He's saying the people can change the Constitution, but can't take away a fundamental liberty? What does that mean? It means he's trying to have it both ways. It means he speaks with talk fung. talk fung. He speaks with forked tongue. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Our theory is, and our submission is, reading this court's jurisprudence, accepting the propositions that have been advanced, including by Justice Mosk in his remarkable concurring opinion in the death penalty case, saying this is macabre, what the people have done is macabre, it is callous, it is unenlightened, but they have the power to do it. And so my answer is the people do have the raw power to define the rights. That's the nature of the consent of the government.
You hear this? Even though we're unenlightened barbarians, it's still a democracy, and we have the power to do this. And you take this power away from the people, you've stripped away the entire meaning of the vote, is what he's saying. Houston, Texas, Gary, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, what people need to understand about us in the black community is we should not teach this lifestyle because it's not conducive for us. We're already dying of gang violence. We already have this thing where we have this thing in our community to download brothers. We got brothers come in prison. It's too much going on, and we cannot be teaching our children that this is the lifestyle that they should embrace. When we are the least of all the people, there are people populated. We got more people that are Hispanic. There are people that are white. And we're in the black community. We're dwindling in numbers. And
Let me give you a fact that came out in a news story last night. Do you know that one out of four children in kindergarten in America is of Hispanic descent?
I can believe that. I can believe that. And this
is a result of unbridled illegal immigration. But let's put that aside for the moment. You raise an issue I had never heard discussed before, by the way, as to why the black community is opposed to homosexual marriage. It's also true that the black community is fundamentally very conservative, isn't it?
That's correct. We're very conservative. And what it is, Dr. Savage, we have a lot of black women here are looking for husbands. And we got too many questionable guys. Either they're in jail, they're dead, they're down low brothers where they sling both ways. They marry a woman and sleep with a man without anyone knowing about it. And so, therefore, what is happening is the choices for the black women are dwindling, and the frustration of us is we're having people telling us we need to embrace something that is going to destroy us. And so
that's very interesting. That's an argument I've never heard on the major networks for obvious reasons. They would never permit a man like you to express his opinion, which is, of course, why the medium of talk radio is so darn important. I'm surprised Obama doesn't understand that. Actually, I do know he understands it, which is why he's been attacking talk radio, because he understands it gives people like you the power to express your point of view, which, frankly, I never heard before, Gary. I thought I had heard every argument. I hadn't. I had never heard that argument.
And that's the thing I wanted to bring to the surface, Dr. Savage, because we're in the black community. We don't have nobody speaking our voice. We have people speaking about black issues on what's racism, but nobody's talking about the underlying thing that a lot of black women are going through. We got young boys with their pants hanging down their waistline between their kneecaps and their thighs. And so, therefore, what is happening...
Yeah, well, Gary, sidetrack. I was eating a taco for lunch today, and I saw white boys aping that, wearing pants down, beach below their buttocks. Can you explain to me, am I wrong in interpreting that? Isn't that a jailhouse thing where the pants hang down when the belt is taken away? Isn't that where that got picked up?
That's that's where it all originated from. It is definitely from the jailhouse. That was just saying.
Now, why would a young boy, a white boy in particular, want to ape that behavior? What in the world are they saying when they walk around holding their pants up that's falling off their behind? What is that?
I
look at kids like this and I shake my head and say, that's going to pay my Social Security when that thing works? That creature's incapable of holding up his own pants.
But see, what they're saying is, they're saying to the black, when you got white guys do that, they're trying to say, I understand you in the black community. I'm part of who you are. I'm part of the struggle. I'm part of the ghetto. See, it's a trend now to say that I'm from the hood. It's a trend now to say that I come up hardcore. It's a trend now to say that I got street credit because...
So they're acting like they're tough and they've been in prison? That's why they walk around with their pants underneath their behind?
Well, that comes from the rap industry. The rap industry glorifies this, and so what they do is they want to imitate what they see. It's just imagery. That's all it is. And
it's frightening. It's just frightening to think this is an entire generation that's so lost. Well, Gary, you made an amazing point that the black community is opposed to gay marriage because the black community in particular is so in such a perilous state as a result of a low birth rate, a low marriage rate, a low rate of family to begin with, that this is the last thing you'd want to teach the young children.
Please, Dr. Savage, I want to make this one more point to bring this to surface. And another reason is the black community is tired of everybody else getting their rights. And, like, say, let's use illegal immigrants for instance. The police can't touch them. They get special privileges. But yet black people are always getting beat up by police and thrown in jail for just about anything. And then the gays can't be touched. But yet a black man can be so far brutalized by police. And so black people look at that and say, hey, wait a minute. The civil rights movement for us, we marched for it. But everybody else has benefited except us. And we're still talking about the same thing, and that is brutality. Racism.
Well, Gary, on the topic of gay marriage, though, I don't want to diminish what you just said because I can't comment on it. I don't know the data on that. But I do know the data on this. In San Francisco, when 800 priests and ministers marched against gay marriage, they were black, they were Chinese. Do you know that the news media did not cover that? 800 minority Christian preachers marched on City Hall and said we're opposed to homosexual marriage. The vermin in the media here covered that up.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
For America, what a day for equality. By the way, as California goes, so goes the rest of the nation. It's inevitable. This door is wide open now. It's going to happen, whether you like it or not. This is the future, and it's now. Courts across this country, we're waking up.
1, 2, 3, hey. Look at Mr. Lee. 3, 4, 5, hey. Look at him, John.
It is the Savage Nation. That's Annie Toosome Newsome, the mayor of our fair city, speaking with talked tongue on the issue of homosexual marriage, because it really shouldn't be a matter of it's going to happen whether you want to or not. I mean, what does that say about a guy who wants to be governor? He tells you it's going to happen whether you want it or not? Well, The California Supreme Court today heard arguments pro and con, and they didn't say so clearly that you're going to have it whether you want it or not. In fact, Justice Joyce Kennard impressed me. I was impressed that we even had a justice who could think anymore. You know, you get such an opinion of judges sitting on the outside and not actually hearing them. This is a literate, intelligent woman who presents an argument so clearly as she does in clip one. Listen.
From the beginnings of our state constitutional history, the right of the people to alter or change the provision of the state constitution has been a basic right, a fundamental right, to use your term, an inalienable right. But us choose between these two rights, the right that you have mentioned to the court, the inalienable right to marry, and the right of the people to change the Constitution as they see fit. And what I'm picking up from the oral argument in this case is that this court should willy-nilly disregard the will of the people.
Wow. When I heard that, I was stirred that anyone is even still referring to the will of the people. We live in such a neo-Marxist universe between the media and the Obama gang that you rarely hear the will of the people. It's as though Obama is a sovereign, and whatever he wants, he gets. The people should understand that we live in a democracy where the will of the people is what is operational, not the will of the government. Not the will of the president, not the will of the governor, not the will of the gay lobby. It's the will of the people. And that's what went on today. Now, I'm not so sure that the justices, so-called, are not going to do it all over again and steal the rights of 7 million voters and tell them, basically, that they're wrong. I'm not so sure which way they're going to vote. But I was impressed that we even had a justice on the California Supreme Court who would even refer to the people in that a positive manner. Now, Kenneth Starr represented the people, and he made a very interesting point. He said that even if the people, he said the people have the right to be unwise. The people have the right to be unenlightened. He said the people have the raw power to define rights because it's the nature of the consent of the governed. Now, then we heard arguments on the other side saying that what if a ballot proposition had come up, a ballot initiative saying that marriage shall only be a union between a white or a black and a black, which is, of course, you talk about a truly specious argument, to use a caller's specious word yesterday. That's a specious argument because such a ballot initiative would never make it to the ballot. Never. It would be ruled unconstitutional from the get-go. And they know this. The gay lobby understands that in order to get something on the ballot to begin with, it has to clear many, many, many legal hurdles, which it did. This proposition said simply, marriage shall be between a man and a woman. It didn't take anything away from anybody. My fundamental argument is not legalistic. My fundamental argument is not legalistic at all. I mean, I've made some arguments that I think are very important, but they're not legalistic. I don't particularly like the law, or I would have been a lawyer. Obviously, I have the intelligence to have been anything I wanted to be. And what kind of lawyer I would have been is another story. I didn't want to be a lawyer. I didn't want to have to memorize laws and trick people with the laws. And some do and some don't. All right, some do it and some don't. We need lawyers, I guess, and we need great legal scholars. We live in a land of laws. Unfortunately, the government seems to be working as though it's not a land of laws, that it's a land of the government. Of the government, for the government, and by the government. That's the new rule coming down from the White House, and I don't like it at all. But that's a separate story. Let's stick to this issue today, gay marriage. Do you care about it one way or the other is what I've asked you before. And I would like to hear from you whichever side of the argument you are on. The phone number, again, is 1-800-449-8255. All of these stories are up on my website, michaelsavage.com, and we ran a live feed of the hearing. I was amazed with the technology that we could run the oral arguments today on the website while they were happening. I couldn't stop listening to them. I was amazed watching this. I love modern technology. It encourages me that the people, the more they know, the more they learn, the more they hear, the more that's open to the people through technology, the freer the society will be. And that's why it bothers me deeply that Obama and his minions would want to close down talk radio. You have a right to hear both sides of an argument, or three sides to an argument, or 10 sides to an argument, not just what the government wants you to hear. That's why you must oppose Obama's desire to attack talk radio hosts and to attack talk radio. You must. I don't care what side of the argument you're on. Because trust me, although you'd like to hear Michael Savage silenced today, tomorrow it could be you who the government silences. Make no mistake about it. You talk about the liberal view of the slippery slope. There is no more slippery slope than shutting down a dialogue. That's the most slippery of all slopes for a democracy such as ours. The mark of a true democracy, frankly, is a raucous debate. A raucous debate with people screaming and yelling on both sides of the aisle about what they truly believe to be the truth. And then the people will decide. That's the mark of a democracy, not a quiet, gentlemanly discussion from one side or the other. And no people power and no people involvement. You understand that? This is all tied up with denying or nullifying the votes of 7 million people. And I am frankly very, very disappointed that a lawyer and the attorney general of the state of California, who was the top lawyer in the state, a man who would be governor, would so twist the law and say that although I am given the job of upholding the laws of the state of California, in this case I will go against the law of the state of California. I'm very, very disappointed because I donated money to Jerry Brown's campaign a number of years ago when I thought he was a moderate and I thought he was a centrist. But I have found out I was tricked, frankly, and I'm not happy to say this. Suzanne in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. As I told your screener, I'm a registered nurse in Sacramento. We in the medical community see gay marriage as a possibly a help to the public health issue. Gay marriage will promote monogamy. It will discourage those who are promiscuous, and it will discourage the transmission of diseases such as STDs, HIV, hepatitis. So,
wait a minute. You're making another argument that doesn't hold water in one regard. How about the millions of heterosexual couples who are in committed relationships who do not want to get married and don't need marriage in order to remain monogamous?
I understand that issue, but that's not related to this issue. I'm just speaking of this issue.
It is related to this issue. You're arguing that if gays are allowed to give each other a ring and have the state sign a certificate, they're suddenly going to be monogamous because of that piece of paper?
They will be less promiscuous. We in the medical community see that.
Don't speak to me with that imperial statement of we. What do you mean we in the medical community? I mean you and your few friends.
I'm a long-term valued employee in the Catholic Health.
All right, fine. You have an opinion. I understand that, and many in the medical establishment may agree with that opinion, but by no means is that the opinion of the medical community, Suzanne.
No, it is not. However, my colleagues and I speak uniformly on a daily that it may decrease the transmission of STDs, hepatitis, and HIV.
I don't see how. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. The argument you're making doesn't make sense. How do you explain the millions of couples who are living together in a monogamous relationship who do not need a certificate to keep them monogamous? How do you explain that? And then conversely, how do you explain the millions of couples who have that marriage certificate who are cheating on their spouses?
I'm not here to explain all that. That might be for Dr. Phil, but I'm explaining that we may improve monogamy if we have a committed...
Well, you see, you're not hearing is what it is. You're not listening. You're using, I think, a playbook argument that's not holding water because you're dealing with someone who's... let us say, capable of seeing through your argument. But I appreciate your listening. I do. I just don't agree with it. There are millions of couples out there who have the marriage certificate, who are married, who have STDs because they're running around and cheating on their spouse without anyone knowing about it. What did the marriage certificate do? It kept the man at home. He didn't use a prostitute because he had a marriage certificate. It didn't keep him at home. He did what he wanted to do anyway. And conversely, there are, I would say, millions of couples living together, probably both gay and straight, mainly hetero, who are not married, who are you know, in a bonded relationship that they respect. I don't think the piece of paper makes a person more or less promiscuous at all. And I think it's not the argument that we're having here today anyway. The argument is whether or not this ballot initiative denied anyone rights. It didn't. It never took anything away from anybody. The ballot initiative is very clear. It said marriage shall be between a man and a woman. That's what the ballot initiative said. And the question was raised, how does that take anything away from anybody? In fact, Chief Justice Ron George asked what rights were lost over these 14 words other than being able to label their union as a marriage. In other words, a gay couple can still be married, but they just don't have the right to demand that the state and the people certify that and say to them, okay, we consider it sacred, your bond, because the people don't consider it sacred. There's not a religion on earth that sees marriage as anything but between a man and a woman. Now, you may say that the religions are antiquated, and it's time for the religions to modernize. Well, good luck. Good luck if you think that just because you yourself have changed and turned everything upside down in your own mind, that you're going to turn the whole world upside down. It's not going to work that way. And as I said earlier, I believe that marriage as an institution is so fragile and the family is under such attacks that the last thing the family and marriage needs today is yet a further attack upon it by this, I believe, counterfeit fraud called homosexual marriage. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So, we heard a lot of arguments today. I mean, I'm playing them for you because this was not played outside of California, and I think it's very important because what does happen in California in this case will affect the rest of the country. And we're talking about the arguments today before the California Supreme Court about homosexual marriage. And I've played both sides of the story. I've asked you to comment. Bob in New York, WOR, go ahead, please. You're up next.
Yes.
Bob, you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Yes. My daughter is gay, and she's in a would like to be married. They have a 3-year-old child, a daughter. And they cannot have the rights that a married couple would have without being married.
What rights are those?
Well, inheritance and the rights that normal married people would have.
But they're not normal married people. That's the whole point. All of civilization, all of religion says they're not normal married people. And you want the people to say, well, they are normal married people. They're just like a man and a woman. The people have said, no, they're not a man and a woman. That's the whole argument.
Well, that's why they would like things to be changed so that...
Well, of course they would like things to be changed, but the people don't go along with it, Bob. That's the whole issue here. What? Don't the people have a right to say, no, we don't accept homosexual marriage as equal to that of a man and a woman? Don't they have the right to do that?
They do have that right.
Well, that's the... See, this is... It's a very difficult thing for a father, such as yourself, who loves his daughter, to raise this issue. And I'm not trying to make a mockery of you or your daughter or your daughter's relationship. But 7 million voters went to the ballot box. They didn't shoot anybody. They didn't scream and yell. They didn't blow anything up. And they passed a they voted on a proposition which said, marriage is between a man and a woman. I still, for the life of me, cannot understand why two lesbians, for example, who are living together, need that certificate. What do they need it for? What if all other rights were granted to the lesbian couple or the homosexual couple, such as the rights of inheritance? Why would that not work?
It would work, but somehow they don't have all those rights granted to them. And by the way, you happen to be my favorite program, and I am an extreme conservative.
Well, you see, Bob, I didn't know what your politics are, and I can understand the conundrum you're in. Because when it comes to our children, nothing is good enough for them, and nothing should stand between our protection of them. And I understand that it can be a real heartbreaking situation. And until, you know, one of your children, I suppose, decides to go down that road, you really don't know what it's like to have that situation in your own life. So I can respect all of that, Bob. I don't happen to be in that situation, but I respect the fact that millions of people, let's say hundreds of thousands of parents might be in that situation. But I don't understand why relegating same-sex couples to domestic partnership doesn't work. I still don't understand that.
Domestic partnership doesn't give them the same rights as a marriage does.
Bob, I want to ask a side question because we'll disagree on this. When did your daughter know she was not heterosexual?
somewhere in her 30s.
Had she been married to a man, or had she dated men prior to that?
Yes, yes.
All right, well, this is something that's going on, and it goes back to my fundamental point, which is that when you make something too accessible, you remove too many people from the normal track of marriage and family. When I was a kid, you had to get married, and you had to have children. That's how society goes forward. The societal pressures must be upon the children to get married and have children, or we're dead as a people.
Savage.
I'm going to diverge and digress for a moment. One of my favorite books that saved me was called The Importance of Living by Lin Yutang. If you've been listening to my show for 15 years or some part of it, I told a story once that when I was 18 years old, I found this book in a friend's his father's library. And I started reading it, and I was going through my sufferings of young worth, a period of, you know, woe is me, what's life all about? And there was a chapter in there by Lin Yutang called The Chinese Family Ideal that put me straight and put me on the right road. And it was about the Chinese family ideal, and it's so beautiful that I think I'm going to read pieces from you, pieces for you. He writes, it's a well-known fact that that Chinese society and Chinese life are organized on the basis of the family system. This system determines and colors the entire Chinese pattern of life. Whence came the family ideal of life? And he goes on and he answers. He said, with its tremendous emphasis on the husband-wife relationship as the foundation of all human relationships, on filial piety toward parents, annual visits to ancestral graves, ancestor worship, and the institution of the ancestral hall. And he goes into Chinese ancestor worship, which we're not here to discuss. But he talks about man and woman in an interesting way. And he says, God took a handful of mud, molded it into human shape, and breathed into its nostrils a breath, and there was Adam. But Adam began to crack and fall to pieces, and so he took some water, and with the water he molded the clay. And this water which entered into Adam's being was called Eve, and only in having Eve in his being was Adam's life complete. At least that seems to me to be the symbolic significance of marriage. Woman is water and man is clay, and water permeates and molds the clay, and the clay holds the water and gives it substance, in which water moves and lives and has its full being. He then talks about midlife between a man and a woman. Madame Quan, wife of the great Yuan painter Zhao Mengfu, and she herself was a painter. But in the middle of their lives together, his attraction to his wife began to diminish, and he was thinking of taking a mistress. And his wife of many years, Madame Quan, wrote the following poem, which touched his heart and changed his mind. "Twixt you and me, there's too much emotion. That's the reason why there's such a commotion. Take a lump of clay, wet it, pat it, and make an image of me, and an image of you, then smash them, crash them, and add a little water, break them and remake them into an image of you, and an image of me. Then in my clay there's a little of you, and in your clay there's a little of me, and nothing ever shall us sever. Living will sleep in the same quilt, and dead will be buried together." I think that's one of the most beautiful poems written about a husband and wife I've ever read in my life. And I don't hear this anywhere. I don't hear anyone celebrating man and woman. I don't hear anybody celebrating marriage and family. I don't hear anyone celebrating family and children and ancestors. I hear none of this. We're living in a very unbrave new world, and it ties right into our political structure. Our political structure has also evolved into something it was never meant to become in this country. It has been tried before. The system that Obama is trying to impose upon us to bring it down to brass tacks is really not an American system. This system, by the way, is not limited to Obama. It was started a long time ago in this country. And I have used the phrase the neo-Marxist system of Obama, and I use it again and again. When have you heard this president, or the last president for that matter, after the first few years of Bush, after he used the evangelicals to get to the presidency, when did he last, let's go back to Bush, really fundamentally talk about the sacred bond of man and woman, the sacred nature of the family? I didn't hear much of it from Bush. Maybe he did it. Maybe I missed it. Maybe I had the chicken pox when that lesson was given. I don't remember him talking about it. I believe most politicians use various groups until they don't need them, and they have no fundamental beliefs of their own, or if they do, we don't know what they are. But Obama is a married man to a beautiful woman called Michelle. He has two beautiful children. Why doesn't Obama ever discuss the beauties of marriage? You would think that a man who is married himself, in particular for the black community, you heard the caller earlier, why doesn't he talk about the beauties of marriage and the beauties of family? Well, I'll let you figure out why. I'll let you figure out what forces and influences are controlling every power structure in the Western world today. The Chinese Family Ideal by Lin Yutang in the book The Importance of Living. And there's so much beauty in here, but I'm not going to go into it because it's not the right time for philosophy or even poetry. It's really just an issue of what's going on in society. Now, I want to go back to the gay marriage issue per se. I've been arguing about this for a long time. And I have said on many of my programs the following. I guess it's time to repeat it. I have watched the homosexual community in America, if you want to call it a community, I don't think it is, any more than there's a Jewish community or an Italian community or a Hispanic community. I don't think there's one such community of any such group at all. I think that that's a nonsensical a concept. But I've watched the homosexual communities or individuals in this society go from a fun-loving, freedom-oriented, I'll do what I want, I'm anti-bourgeois, I don't want marriage, I just want to do what I want to do with whoever I want when I want to do it. I've seen it go from that to something else entirely. Now, you can say it's evolved, but it hasn't evolved. I believe that a small group of radicals within the homosexual community have used the homosexual community to advance a Marxist agenda. Now, the reason I say that is because I've studied Karl Marx, unlike most who use the phrase Marxism or Marx. And I was the first in the popular media to talk about this over 10 years ago. People didn't know what a socialist was 10 years ago. Even in the conservative band, they weren't using the word socialist till I started using it. And it doesn't matter whether you agree with me or whether you believe me or not. It doesn't matter whether you believe me or not. All that matters is what I'm telling you is the truth. So when I say to you, I know what Marxism is, you have to take it on face value that I know what Marxism is because I've read Das Kapital. One of the tenets of Marxism is the dissolution of the traditional family, which he considers to be slavery. Karl Marx, the communist, said that the family is an institution of slavery. It's an institution of ownership of a wife and children. And that is often used in communist circles, by the way. That is why they pushed forward the notion of so-called free love in the 1920s and 30s when the communist movement last made a major movement in the United States. The economy was horrible. The unions particularly were filled with men who were looking for – union halls were filled with men looking for work. And I heard from my father when he was a very young man that there were communist women who used to go into those union halls and talk about free love. And they would go out with as many men as they wanted and whenever they wanted. And the guys liked that. They loved that part of it. But they didn't quite understand what the communist women were doing with their concept of free love. They weren't doing it because they liked men, per se. They weren't doing it because they were sexually promiscuous, per se. They were doing it to destroy marriage. They were doing it, the communist women, to destroy the institution of bourgeois marriage in their mind. Now, speed the camera forward. You go all the way forward to the gay movement that we're living with today. It's a continuation of that very same concept of to destroy the institution of bourgeois marriage, in my opinion. Just as many other minority communities have been taken over by radicals who are Marxists at their core and have used, in this case, the gays, in some cases, the Hispanic movement, that is the illegal alien movement, is largely driven by white communists. I can name them. Many of them have attacked me personally. Many of them have flared up Hispanics who should be my natural audience against me, telling them I'm a bad guy without telling them that I actually stand for the very same principles and values that the Hispanic people do. So these white communists have used Hispanics, they've used gays, they've used blacks, and any other minority community they could to push the Marxist agenda. You will never have heard, you have never heard anything as clearly described about what is really going on than you just heard on this show in the last few minutes. And I want you to take it to heart and understand what's behind all of this push for gay marriage. It has almost nothing to do with rights for homosexuals to marriage. It has everything to do with the destruction of the bourgeois family. It is emanating from, and it is being pushed by, the Marxist movement itself. Now, you say that's crazy. You can't prove it. Many of the people don't believe it. They don't know it. It doesn't matter whether they know it or not. I don't care whether Gavin Newsom or Jerry Brown understand this. It doesn't matter to me. They're not as well-read as I am. I had Jerry Brown on the show a few weeks ago. I don't think he did that well. I found out that most politicians don't read. They don't study philosophy. Well, maybe they did in college. But they've since left all of that behind. They could care less about the origins of various social programs or social pressures. All they add up is whether or not the people are with them and they can get more people going this way or that way. Well, that's not my job. I'm a talk radio host. I'm not a politician. Sure, I want an audience, and I have a big audience. But I didn't get this audience by lying to them. I didn't get this audience by not knowing what I was talking about. Whether or not you agree with me is almost irrelevant. I know that many of you don't agree with me, but you listen to me because you like my presentation of arguments. And I want to remind you in concluding this small monologue, of a statement that Confucius wrote. He wrote this: "It is not truth that makes man great, but man that makes truth great." Think about it, and I'll be right back.
Savage.
This is a great discussion we're having today. So far, we haven't had any haters calling, which is wonderful. That we can still discuss things in America is a miracle. Maybe you ought to tell your friends in the White House that this is the last vestige of democracy. We are, in fact, the old Cracker Barrel. We are, in fact, the old town hall meeting that they fake with these fake town hall meetings where people are picked in advance with stooge questions right out of the ex-Soviet Union. We are, in fact, democracy. I just want to say this on this gay marriage issue. You know, when you crossbreed a horse with a donkey, you get a mule. Now, the mule may look to some like a horse, and to some it may look like a donkey. But it is neither a horse nor a donkey. It is still a mule. People understand that. And that's how most people see this issue, I'm sorry to tell you. You can call it what you want, but my friends, it's still a mule. It's neither a horse nor a donkey. It is not marriage. When you say Bobby and Harold are married, the majority of people on earth say, no, they're not married. It's a mule. Now, you could say, well, no, it's not a mule. It's a horse or it's a donkey. No, it's a mule. To most people, it's a mule. And you can't suddenly change everyone's mind because you will it to be so. That's in simple vernacular rather than in legalistic vernacular, which was used today in the courts, and I enjoyed listening to the legalistic arguments. In a way, I was actually anguished to listen to legalistic arguments because I understand by legalistic arguments, millions of people were put to their deaths in Germany. It worries me that legalistic arguments can be used to condemn people to death. And I like analogy, legalistic arguments can be used to spare people from death. And common sense is often thrown out the window, as Samuel Johnson, the great English essayist, wrote hundreds of years ago, "The law is an ass, A-S-S. I guess he was referring to the donkey or the mule, because he understood that the law itself doesn't often make sense. It's just the law unto itself. It's a rule. It's a set of edicts written for lawyers, but it may not be making much sense to the average person. And that's why I love the ballot initiative. The ballot process, which was initiated in only a few states, is the last vestige we have of direct democracy in this country. You know and I know that the national elections are not an example of democracy. We have a choice between a Democrat and a Republican. What kind of democracy is that when most people wanted someone other than Obama or McCain? They took what they were given. That wasn't direct democracy. It was a fraud and a sham. So every few years, in some states, we have access to direct democracy through the ballot process. And this ballot initiative, that marriage shall be between a man and a woman, took a very long time to achieve status to be in, entered onto the ballot. It doesn't just get put up there by a bunch of crackpots who say, you shall hang all people of a certain race. That's a specious argument. Oh, we got to be careful because the people are stupid. They're violent. They could say that blacks shall only marry blacks and whites shall only marry whites. Such an initiative would stand no chance in the first rung. It would be tossed out before it even entered the discussion. It wouldn't get there. Gays know that. This took a long time, and it was argued over repeatedly and incessantly by brilliant legal minds. And the ballot initiative passed every process, every challenge, because all it did was reaffirm what society knows to be a truth, which is that marriage is between a man and a woman. And to now start arguing that that takes something away from people and it's a civil right and you have no right to deny me my rights, that's nonsense. What you're doing is denying the people their right to redress grievances at the ballot box. By taking that side, what you're saying is the people are idiots and they have no right to vote for anything. You'll decide through the courts and through a few small judges what the people shall do. And that's why, my friends, this Proposition 8 on gay marriage, so to speak, is such an important issue. It's extremely important. And that's why Proposition 8 passed by a 52%. That's why 7 out of 10 blacks voted for Proposition 8. That's why 9 out of 10 Chinese voted for Proposition 8, even though the black and Chinese community are 95 to 99% Democrat and go down that line. When it comes to family, those communities in particular understood what was at stake. They see what the devastation going on in their communities. To the Chinese community, the idea of supporting two men getting married is not only wrong, it's crazy. It's totally insane. It goes against their whole tradition. Everything they've believed in from the time they were born, it goes against everything the Chinese community is taught and believes in. And as an earlier caller made some good points so aptly on the show, he said the black community of all communities voted against the gay marriage, voted in favor of heterosexual marriage, because it's in such trouble that there are so many black women who can't find husbands. There are so many men who are in jail. There are so many men who are unavailable for marriage or incapable or undesiring such an institution, that the last thing that community needs is a further assault upon itself. So that's why those communities didn't vote by accident in such high numbers for heterosexual marriage to be supported. So I believe I have made my points in the best way I know how. I don't know that I've converted anybody to my way of thinking, nor do I think that I will have won over any favors in any communities through these discussions in such a gentlemanly, civil, logical fashion at all. I think people's minds are made up, and I believe that the final word shall be the words that Justice Kennard spoke from my point of view, which is that the people have the right. The people have the right to change the Constitution. The people have a fundamental right to determine how the judges shall act and how the legislators shall act, not the other way around. That the fundamental right of all liberty-loving people is inherent in the people themselves. This is the bedrock of conservatism, by the way. This is the bedrock of Western civilization. This is the bedrock of the Magna Carta, and then later on, hundreds of years later, our U.S. Constitution. The bedrock of those documents says that the power lies within the people, not within the king. Now you want us to say, okay, we'll turn it back to the king? In this case, the judges shall be the king because you don't like what the people say? Well, think very carefully what you're asking for. What you're asking for is tyranny. And my friends, I know something about tyranny. And if you keep promoting tyranny, whether it be on the level of the ballot initiative or in some other manner, that is Obama, for example, creating these special czars of this and special czars of that who don't report to a Congress, you shall have tyranny. And if you think that this tyranny will always be your friend, then you do not know history. Tyranny is nobody's friend. Because as Lord Acton taught everybody when he wrote, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely, he was thinking of a future time when an Obama would be elected. An Obama who no one has ever said no to. An Obama for whom the skids were greased at every step of the way. An Obama who is a tempestuous, petulant man who wants it his way. And that's why we must be very careful of the emerging tyranny in the United States of America, whether it be with the gay community tyrannically screaming, give it to us because it's our right and you can't take it away from us when the people have said otherwise, or a president who wants to accumulate too much power in his hands so that he can control not only the budget but every aspect of your life from the cradle to the grave without any chance for you to redress your grievances. This is Michael Savage. I hope I have given you a good show for your money.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I'm going to devote a little time now to a very, very important book by Sinclair Lewis called It Can't Happen Here. This book was written during the last Depression. In fact, just before the last Depression is when it came out, or during the middle of it, and copyrighted 1935. I wouldn't waste your time, but I'm not going to waste your time, because you must hear what Sinclair Lewis wrote. Now, I want to remind you, Sinclair Lewis was a socialist. He projected a future America where a right-wing government would take over the country. You hear? Where a right-wing government would take over the country. And he, in his fiction, It Can't Happen Here, Sinclair Lewis wrote, the 15 points of victory for the forgotten men written by the Democrat candidate for the United States President, Buzz Windrip. And I'm going to summarize some of these 15 points. During the very first week of his campaign, Senator Windrip clarified his philosophy by issuing his distinguished proclamation, The 15 Points of Victory for the Forgotten Men. Now, I want to remind you, this is a fiction written in 1935 about what would happen to America if a right-winger took over the country. One, all finances in the country, including banking, insurance, stocks and bonds and mortgages, shall be under the absolute control of a federal central bank owned by the government, and conducted by a board appointed by the president, which board shall, without need of recourse to Congress for legislative authorization, be empowered to make all regulations governing finance. Two, the president shall appoint a commission equally divided between manual workers, employers, and representatives of the public to determine which labor unions are qualified to represent the workers. Number three, after the revolution, In contradistinction to the doctrines of red radicals, now remember, this was a projection of what would happen should a right-winger take over the government. In contradistinction to the doctrines of red radicals with their felonious expropriation of the arduously acquired possessions which ensure to aged persons their security, this league and party will guarantee private initiative and the right to private property for all time. Four, believing that only under God Almighty, to whom we render all homage, do we Americans hold our vast power, we shall guarantee to all persons absolute freedom of religious worship, provided, however, that no atheist, agnostic, believer in black magic, nor any Jew who shall refuse to swear allegiance to the New Testament, nor any person of any faith who refuses to take the pledge to the flag, shall be permitted to hold any public office or to practice as a teacher, professor, lawyer, judge, or as a physician, except in the category of obstetrics. Five, annual net income per person shall be limited to $500,000. No accumulated fortune may at any one time exceed $3 million per person. No one person shall, during his entire lifetime, be permitted to retain an inheritance or various inheritances in total exceeding $2 million. All incomes or estates in excess of the sums named shall be seized by the federal government for use in relief and administrative expenses. Shall I go on? I can go on. Congress shall have the sole right to issue money, and immediately upon our inauguration, it shall at least double the present supply of money in order to facilitate the fluidity of credit. Did you hear any of this? Are you listening to me? Or you didn't hear this morning on the Blowhard show, so you don't know what you're listening to. Are you realizing what's going on here? Here it is. I'll read this to you. I'll read this to you from page 69, written in 1935. They realized that this country has gone so flabby that any gang daring enough and unscrupulous enough and smart enough not to seem illegal can grab hold of the entire government and have all the power and applause and salutes, all the money and palaces and will and women they want. They're only a handful. But just think how small Lenin's gang was at first, and Mussolini's, and Hitler's, and Kemal Pasha's, and Napoleon's. You'll see all the liberal preachers and modernist educators and discontented newspapermen and farm agitators, maybe they'll worry at first, but they'll get caught up in the web of propaganda like we all were in the Great War, and they'll all be convinced that even if our president maybe has got a few faults, he's on the side of the plain people and against all the tight old political machines, and they'll rouse the country for him as the great liberator. Did you hear any of this? But will Americans stand for it long, whimpered Emma? Oh, no, not people like us, the descendants of the pioneers. Oh, no, it can't happen here. Shall I repeat to you that it has happened here? Shall I repeat to you who has done this? Are you recognizing the fact that Sinclair Lewis, although he was frightened of a future government taken over by the right wing, did not even see himself as the prophet he was, and that this country would be taken over by a gang of left-wingers, the Obama gang? Are you aware of the fact that the country has been taken over by a gang, a daring gang, an audacious gang, the audacity of revolution? An audacious gang has taken over America. And there they are, ladies and gentlemen, printing money as though they own it, taxing the people who earn the money, and making deals with communists around the world under the guise of peace and freedom. Now, I want you to take the arc of what Obama has done so far and project it ahead 2 years, 3 years, and 4 years, and ask yourself, if this man is not stopped, what this country will look like, what your family will look like, and whether your freedoms will be intact in 3 or 4 years unless this man is opposed at every turn. There was a British newspaper that published Obama's 10 strongest critics. They said Michael Savage is amongst them, and they quoted one thing I said. They quoted me correctly. They said the following. Michael Savage says that Obama has never heard anyone say no to him ever since his boyhood in Hawaii. As a result, he has a messianic complex, and he continues to do things that are disconnected from reality that simply aggrandize more and more power to himself. They got it right. Let's go to the callers on the Savage Nation. Chicago, Anthony, you're up. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage, I do not understand why the media fears you so much. Over the weekend, I listened to two radio stations where the callers were commenting on CPAC, and they actually beeped out your name.
Well, C-SPAN is run by a twerp by the name of Brian Lamb, who is a front for the Democrat establishment. Brian Lamb is an evil little man who exists only on taxpayer money. Brian Lamb runs C-SPAN, and the, let us say, left of center, anytime they had an intellectual dissident who was a giant, they simply made believe that intellectual giant who was a dissident didn't exist. They blacked that name out from the newspapers. They blacked that name out from the media. And eventually they put those names on a list, and they took those people away and put them into the Gulag Archipelago. So I'm in very good company. That a twerp like Brian Lamb would bleep my name out and you would hear it indicates just what a threat I am to them. Now, the second question, the more important, is why am I a threat to them? Isn't that the real question?
Well, we know why, because like you said before, your voice rings a truth that can't be denied. And this, the media is so terrified of you because they know that you can make such a difference. You are making such a difference.
Well, they know I stand for certain things, which they oppose. I stand for firm borders, English as the national language, and the cultural bedrock that this country was built upon, borders, language, culture. They stand for the opposite. They stand for open borders. They stand for multiple languages, and they stand for no culture other than the statist culture. So I am their natural enemy. They also understand that I'm probably the Well, let's put it to you this way. Amongst the most articulate in the media, they could never challenge me directly. If I had Brian Lamb on this show, I would chop him up to pieces. He wouldn't even fit back into his size 3 shoes when I got through with him.
Well, Dr. Savage, I have to say that I think...
Let me tell you something. A year ago, I was granted the Freedom of Speech Award by the talk radio industry, as you may know. And I gave a very important speech that they refused to run. And they refused to run it because I was already on their Stalinist list of none persons. That did not stop multiples of 10,000s of people from buying those copies of my Freedom of Speech Award. And I'm going to send you one right now, Anthony. Stay in the line. Stay in the line. Anthony gets a free copy of Michael Savage's DVD, his most important Freedom of Speech Award. Mississippi James, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I'd love to know why you seem to hang all the present problems on the Obama administration and the Democrats and liberals when I feel like both parties are equally culpable in this mess we're in, and I wish...
Well, we've heard that before. You must be a new listener, and you probably didn't hear me criticizing George Bush for 7.5 years.
Oh, no, sir. I've listened to you for years.
Well, last year I called George Bush a fiscal socialist, did I not?
You did that.
All right, so don't accuse me of being partisan in this manner. However, the magnitude of socialism has been amped up to a point of no return under Obama. How in the world can you justify $2.2 trillion in spending without disclosing who got that money, unless you're a gangster?
Oh, I don't, sir. It's awful.
All right. We have a gang that took over America, but they're a very clever, cunning gang. They're not acting like a gang, are they?
No, they're not.
Well, they are. They're acting like a gang, only they're pretending to be nice guys. Quote, we can go back to the dark ages. The crust of learning and good manners and tolerance is so thin. It would just take a few thousand big bombs to wipe out all the eager young men and all the libraries and historical archives and patent offices, all the laboratories and art galleries, all the castles and Periclean temples and Gothic cathedrals, all the cooperative stores and motor factories, every storehouse of learning. No inherent reason why your grandchildren, if anybody's grandchildren will survive at all, shouldn't be living in caves and heaving rocks at catamounts. Sinclair Lewis, it can't happen here. My friends, it is happening here.
Savage.
As long as I hold this office, I will do whatever it takes to put this economy back on track and put this country back to work.
By all means necessary, by direct action.
Worked so hard to move this plan forward. It's a responsibility that this generation did not ask for, but one that we must accept for the future of our children and our grandchildren.
You mean by putting the responsibility on our grandchildren, we're going to help this generation of people who want to live now and have it now? Give me now, buy me now, so our grandchildren should pay for it? No, you're wrong.
Smaller differences in service of a greater purpose. That's the test facing the United States of America.
The greater purpose?
In the winter of our hardship.
Wait a minute. The greater good for the greatest number? Sounds like Karl Marx a little bit in there.
Stay true to that purpose in the weeks and months ahead. After a day of speaking with and listening to the fundamentally decent men and women who call this nation.
Oh, yeah, right. You listen to the Savage Nation. We're not decent. 10 million of us should be put in concentration camps.
That's what I intend to promote in the weeks and days ahead.
Name one fiscal conservative who you listen to. You would not even permit a vote on no contractor money for illegal aliens.
Do you think that you risk losing some credibility or even talking down the economy by using dire language like that?
Good for you, Jennifer Loven of the AP. God bless her.
What I've said is what others.
She has more you-know-what than the men sitting there, the empty suits.
On an economy of this severity, then you potentially create a negative spiral that
potentially
becomes much more difficult for us.
And
to
if
get
you
out
spend
of
too much, you potentially do damage as well, correct? Potentially.
They did not.
So it's an experiment now for the professor.
Or essentially for the entire 90s, they did not see any.
The professor needs an experiment with your children's income.
So what I'm trying to underscore is what the people in Elkhart already understand.
What do I care about the people in Elkhart? Why don't you bring up Judy Blah-Blah? Judy Blah-Blah had 25 children, and she needs a bailout so she can have 8 more implanted in her.
Now, 3.6 million jobs The problems are accelerating.
Why don't you give money for fertility clinics so that every welfare case can get octuplets implanted? That'll increase jobs. There's a job for the fertility clinic and a job for the welfare department.
Step number one, we have to pass an economic recovery and reinvestment plan.
It does not have to be $1 trillion. Start with $100 billion this year. Let's see how well you do with it.
In the Senate.
See, I don't understand. Why not start with $100 billion? That's an awful lot of money. See how you do with it. We'll come back next year for another $100 billion. Why do you need $1 trillion this year?
Some of the criticisms really are with the basic idea that government should intervene at all in this moment of crisis.
We need government, okay? Start with $100 billion, not $1 trillion. Move on. Next question. You made your point, Professor.
And in fact, there are several who suggested that FDR was wrong to intervene back in the New Deal. They're fighting battles that I thought were resolved a pretty long time ago. You're wary of government intervening
in the
economy.
And most psychiatrists at Harvard recommend Ritalin for children who don't have hyperactivity. What does that mean, most economists? Yeah, most psychiatrists at Harvard work for the drug company and peddle pills to children. What does that mean?
Start pulling back in terms of spending. That when you have that situation, that
yes, they pull back in terms of spending. They save money. That's right. They save their money, like I did and my father did.
We stand to lose about $1 trillion worth of demand.
So those vermin on Wall Street don't live like pigs.
And what that means is you've
put the vermin on Wall Street in jail, my friend, and you'll get some popularity.
The figure that
put Chris Cox in a docket. Arrest the SEC today, and you'll get some salesmanship going here.
Number that I plucked out of a hat.
What is your strategy for engaging Iran, and when will you start to implement it? Will your timetable be affected at all?
My answer is Allah Akbar. Next question.
And are you getting any indications that Iran is interested in a dialogue with the United States?
I said during the campaign.
Great pistachio nuts. They export hatred, terror, and pistachio nuts. That's what Iran.
When it comes to promoting
pistachio nuts, terror, and hatred is exported from Iran. Thanks, doctor.
That their attacks. Or their financing.
Could you just say it like it is? They're a terrorist nation, and we're going to put them in their place, and they better stop acting up. Next question.
Bellicose language that they've used towards Israel. Their development.
Tell them if that little psycho with platform shoes keeps it up, it'll be 2,000 degrees over Tehran.
All those things.
It'll be 270,000 degrees over Tehran and rising.
Destabilizing the region.
And the forecast will be cloudy for 1,000 years.
Our interests, but I think, are contrary to the interests of international peace.
Oh, stop mincing words. It's Hitler at Munich. Stop him now, or you're going to pay for it tomorrow with other people's children's lives. Bravo, Michael. Ah, come on. I think I'm going to stop. I got to go for a break anyway. I'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore segment of the Savage Nation.
Las Vegas, Paul, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mr. Savage, I hate to inform you, but my wife tells me I no longer can listen to you because I assume because as educated as you are, you know that the sugar levels go up when you're a diabetic when you get stressed. And she says, with the traffic around here and listening to you and getting all upset with these idiot callers you got calling in, talking about the Guantanamo Bay getting...
Oh, yes, that Osama bin Laden's friend should have constitutional rights when they don't even understand the constitutional rights do not apply to foreigners who are trying to kill you. They apply to U.S. citizens, not to people trying to take away our U.S. and our citizenship.
Yeah, they're all a bunch of friggin' idiots, but...
Thank you. Well, hold on. You mean what? That's the one that got you upset where you almost had a diabetic, went into diabetic shock?
Yeah, that's basically how it is. My sugar levels get up to about 600 or 700 by the time I get home just because.
Wait, are you in a car right now, Paul?
Yes, sir.
All right, hold on. Play Robert Reich for him. I'm going to do it. Hold on. What's your blood sugar now? Do you have an instant meter?
Yeah, it's sitting at about 400.
All right, is it on your finger right now? Because we're going to play a soundbite for you and see where it goes. Are you ready?
Uh-oh. Okay.
No, no, but we got to play the game. You say your blood sugar's at 400. Now I'm going to play something for you. You got to be honest. You got to tell me where the blood sugar goes up, whether it goes up or down. Are you ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
No, is it on the finger now?
Yes, it's. I got to prick it as soon as you start doing it.
Yeah, but how do we know what the rate? Okay, the last time you did it was how long ago?
About 5 minutes ago.
All right, and it was at 5 minutes ago, but that's already when you were angry. It was at 400.
Yeah, I jumped up to 400 because of that.
All right,
idiot.
Get ready. I mean, when I say three, we're going to fire away Robert Reich, and then you're going to prick your finger, and we're going to get a blood sugar count. And a one, and a two, and a three.
I am concerned, as I'm sure many of you are, that these jobs not simply go to high-skilled people who are already professionals or to white male construction workers.
All right. What's the reading, Paul?
Well, I'm sitting at 480 right now, and it's going to keep on climbing. That idiot, I have to give you a little sideline, is that I'm a white male construction worker.
Oh, I shouldn't have done this then. Now I apologize.
I'm going to jump over 700 or 800. She's going to kill me now.
Oh, my God. Now, how do we get it down? How do we help you get the blood sugar down? Because I don't want to have you have a problem in the car there.
Well, your music is perfect because it brings you back to the days to where...
All right, hold on. Which one of the music pieces can we use to bring down your blood sugar?
The Ding-a-ling song?
All right, hold on. First of all, we're sending you a free copy of Psychological Nudity. Already it went down to 500. Now we're going to play Giddy Up Ding Dong. It'll go back to normal. Play Giddy Up Ding Dong for Paul.
Giddy Up Ding Dong, Giddy Up. My horse was tired and I was too. I had a date with my gal at 8. Come on, ding dong, we can be late. Giddy up, giddy up, ding dong, giddy up, giddy up, ding dong.
Oh my God, if I don't know. No music, turn it off. My father, I could hear his voice in the car. Turn off the music, no music in the car. You're going to work now. But Dad, I'm not at work. Never mind. Never mind, no music in the car on the way to work. No music. But why, Dad? We're not there. We're only on the Kosciuszko Bridge. No music. You're going to work. Get your mind ready for work rather than stupidity. No music. Sit in the car. Look forward, straight forward. Hands in the lap. No music. Think about the horrible day you have ahead of yourself in my store. No music. Oh, it's a wonder I'm still walking the earth. Los Angeles, KGIL, Florita, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi there. I'm one of those thin-skinned liberals you were talking about earlier, and I just wanted to ask you a question in terms of Obama's not having been in office 30 days yet. I think, you're neglecting the fact that it was Bush and his regime that got us in this position.
No, I guess you're a new listener because I've been the most ardent critic of Bush for many years, so you don't understand that because you probably never heard the show before. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct.
All right. Well, then you don't know who I am. You're talking to an independent, not to a Republican. Does that help you at all?
Hello?
What do you mean, hello? I just told you something. You didn't hear me? You went deaf already? What's the matter? The government didn't send you your latest hearing aid? What, Obama didn't send you the other hearing aid? You didn't like what you heard, so you didn't hear all of a sudden?
God.
What, the government didn't send you the second hearing aid? What, are you behind on your Medicaid payments?
Not, aren't you?
Yeah, all right, take a walk. Probably another minion paid for by Acorn. In San Francisco on the home station, KNEW, James, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage, what I'm hearing from you that really troubles me is this is beyond, you've gone beyond, way beyond sour grapes from just losing an election. And what you're saying is reactionary, it's slander, and it's un-American.
Okay, and, let's start with you. What did I say that's un-American?
Well, you're attacking President Obama before he's even had a chance. He won an election.
Hey, schmuck, listen to me. I'm not your weak father. I'm Michael Savage. Let me tell you like it is, schmuck. Obama has passed five executive orders. He's jammed through a $1 trillion spending bill. It doesn't matter whether it was done in 1 week or in 4 years. Don't tell me I have to wait 100 days. If I wait 100 days, there'll be no country left.
He's doing what he was elected to do. He had the.
He was not elected to rob the Treasury. Didn't this man say he would not appoint lobbyists?
The people are sick of not.
Wait a minute. Shut up. Shut your mouth. Do you understand that you are an idiot? You're the dupe that he wanted. You're the chinless wonders that elected him. This man said he wanted change. This man said there would be no lobbyists. Are you aware of the fact that he's appointed three major lobbyists to major positions?
If you want to investigate.
Why doesn't that bother you? Why doesn't that bother you?
You investigate Bush's war crimes, savage.
Listen, you weakling, you. You chinless wonder, you. You're the kind of man who, if Obama said he wanted to put talk show hosts in gas chambers, you would say Sieg Heil. Isn't that correct? Tell me I'm wrong, James.
I wouldn't put you. I would definitely get you off the air, though. You have no place.
You would? You know what, my friend? Not only will you not get me off the air, my show has never been bigger. And it's going to get bigger and bigger. Do you know why? Because your man is a hypocrite. Your man is a fraud. And I am going to be not the last, but perhaps the first to continue this exposure of this fraud. And if you don't like it, my friend, you have a choice. You can go and read one of the failing newspapers in San Francisco. Have a nice day. Lisa in New York on WOR. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Mike. I did that crazy nutcase in San Francisco. I've been an astrologer for over 30 years. Eddie Tusum Newsom, he's born under a sign that likes to surround himself with, like, crazy people because it actually makes him feel good and feel justified.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yes. He's born under the sign of Libra in the year of the goat, and he considers himself to be an artiste. And
some artiste. Yeah, and there's a word that goes with the word artiste. It begins with the word bull.
Right. I did your chart, too.
Now you're talking. Let's go for it. Let's hear my astrology.
Okay, you are sweet. You're actually very sweet. You're hardworking. You're ambitious. You believe in humanity. You're very, very, very kind, but you have a ton of disquiet in your nature. And some people call you tactless, but... You're just
me they call tactless. How dare they?
But you have like a moral streak where you can pick out what's moral and what's immoral very easily, very quickly.
How do you know all this about me? Wait a minute, you must be like one of the real McCoy ones.
I've been studying astrology for over 30 years.
Well, how do you know my exact birth? Oh, you looked it up on the internet, my exact birth sign and what time I was born.
Yes.
But do you know what time of day I was born?
No, I don't know. I didn't get that. I was not able to get that without actually
6:30 in the morning.
Oh, that's good. It's better to be born in the daytime than it is at night.
Well, I'm telling you that because I actually want you to do more detailed analysis of my chart and send it to me.
I'll write it down and I'll get back to you when I do the
I mean, Lisa, do you do I know that very religious people don't believe in astrology, but I believe in many different things are functional. I want to ask you something. Do you do this professionally?
I used to. I don't do it right now, but I
mean, if it was good enough for Ronald Reagan and Nancy Reagan, it's good enough for me. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. I have to say, Mr. Savage, we have to be very careful of Barack Obama. He's a born dictator, you know.
Well, okay, lay it on the line. Tell me what astrology says about him.
The guy is a dictator. He's cold. He's cruel. He's an actor. He's always on stage. I've been on the internet. I've been calling people all over the place trying to warn them about Barack Obama, that he's actually a dictator. Right now, we're not seeing the real Barack Obama.
We did see it for a minute. We had a glimpse of it through his wife's mouth.
Right.
And her meanness depicted who he really is behind closed doors. And they hushed her up and they changed her. They gave her new clothing. Remember that?
Uh-huh, yes. Guess what she is?
Remember, suddenly she was no longer the mean Michelle. They marched her out to all the TV shows, all of the front men for them. Larry King, they softened her up, all of the TV shows. When was he born? Under what sign?
She's born under the sign of Aquarius Cat. Her strongest suit is that she's a spy, a double agent.
Oh, now, what do you mean a double agent? For whom?
She finds out every little detail about every single person that she comes into contact with.
Oh, my God. So she's like a Madame Defarge.
Exactly. She's a
Well, America got the heebie-jeebies from Michelle Obama. They freaked out. To this day, when you say Michelle Obama, they go, oh, my God. Everybody saw her when she gave that Hate America speech, and then they changed her whole persona, remember?
She is a double agent. She is really the most dangerous woman on the American political scene. Cindy McCain is actually born under the sign of, like, a saint. She has
She has angelic qualities when you look at Cindy. She has an angelic beauty to her.
Now, John McCain is a strange guy himself. He's a very complicated man. He has what they call a Popeye the Sailor syndrome, and that...
Wait a minute. This is fabulous. What's a Popeye the Sailor syndrome?
He's always Popeye to the rescue. He's always trying to save somebody. He takes your personal problems as if they're his very own. He takes problems right to his heart and goes after things as if they were his own personal problems.
Well, that's a military man. That's a fighter.
Uh-huh.
See, he's got a good heart. He's like a good cop or a good soldier, right?
I just did Colin Powell's chart. Colin Powell is about saving the finances of Colin Powell. That's what he's all about.
Boy, oh boy.
Well,
let's go to the next step. How about Sarah Palin?
Sarah Palin's a very interesting person. She's got a very quick mind. She's a quick study. She can be put into different positions, and she learns really quick and gets up to speed really quick. And she's got a kind heart. She's very good at multitasking.
All right, Joe Biden.
Joe Biden is a kind of guy that his first love in life is children. He loves children and anything to do with children, but he's got a mouth that's brash, and he fumbles over his own tongue. He falls over his own tongue.
Boy, you're good. You're good. Lisa, you're good.
Let me tell
you. Well, Lisa, is there anything more that you can divulge through your astrological analyses?
Who do you want me to look up?
George Bush.
Oh, he's very interesting. I did him a long time ago, and when I tried to tell people about George Bush, they wouldn't hear me. George Bush loses sleep at night. Picture a big, big German Shepherd laying out in the yard. He's got a doghouse, but he won't go in it. He sleeps in front of the doghouse with one ear cocked, closes his eyes, but the slightest noise wakes the dog, and he runs around the perimeter in the dark, smelling the fence and looking for the...
Oh! Lisa, you really have to come into the inner circle of the Savage Nation. Who are you, Lisa? You're good.
Thank you very much.
Many, many decades ago, when I was traveling in the Fiji Islands working, you know, on folk remedies and healers, I went to an island famous for its witchcraft. And before I could do my collection of plants, I had to go... Before I left Suva, I had to sit with this card reader, a Fijian woman, from one of the most spiritually, let's say, famous islands. And she'd read people's cards. And she read my future. She read my friend's future. It came 100% true for him. And I asked her about me, how long I would live. I asked her about different things. And she said to me, well, you're going to live very long, and you're going to have a good life, and this and that. So I said, well, how will I know when I'm near the end? She said, well, you lose feeling in your legs. And she said, then slowly it'll go up your body and slowly you'll pass. Now, I remember that. It was not such a bad way to go. She didn't mean it would happen in 10 minutes. You know what I'm saying? But now I've never had any illnesses like this. Now my legs are hurting me, Lisa. The bottom of my feet have been hurting me in the last few weeks. What is this all about?
You know what? I will look at my cards. And I will get back to you on that.
I personally think attacked by care. I think it's the stress of being attacked by illegal aliens. I think it's the stress of being attacked by the illegitimate scum, supervisors in San Francisco who condemned me and had nothing to say about a child pornographer. Yeah, I think all of this adds up. Don't you, Lisa? There's only so much any man could take.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Guess what? I'm going to give them all pain like they can't believe.
Savage.
Let's go to Chris now. Chris, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael. This is Chris. I just wanted to let you know real quick. I haven't had my girlfriend 3 years. You actually are responsible in a way. I've been dating her for 7 months now, through the MySpace, which, I mean, it's not. I don't. MySpace ain't the best thing in the world.
How did you meet your girlfriend through me and MySpace? What was the connection?
She was browsing around one night, and through a girl who I knew up here in New York. She actually lives in Florida, but actually just moved up here now. We've been together 7 months. I have a very patriotic page, and she saw my Michael Savage book that I had pasted online on my page itself. And she
wow, that's unbelievably great. You know, that's an idea. Why doesn't everyone listening who has some kind of MySpace page looking for someone put up a picture of my book in their hand? I'll bet you immediately it becomes a symbol of people who find each other.
Savage.
Let's see what else we have. The real Bill Moyers, he is the most annoying person in the media. Sanctimonious Bill Moyers. Sanctimonious Bill Moyers. PBS. He tried to run me down, but all he did was electrify his own hand on the third rail when he found out the people hate him. They know who he is. It came out that when he was a White House aide under LBJ, he tried to find out if certain people were homosexuals for his boss from Texas. They're all the same. The more sanctimonious the liberal, the worse they really are behind closed doors. J. Edgar Hoover's FBI found itself quietly consumed with the vexing question of whether Jack Valenti was gay. Okay, that's the article on that. But Bill Moyers, it turns out if you read the rest of the article, who they say is among the most sanctimonious individuals on television, says quite a feat given the competition. Bill Moyers presents himself as a champion of good government, an intrepid voice for integrity and honesty, ever on the lookout for people who would degrade our public discourse or act in a dishonorable manner. That's why this revelation, they write, Moyers seeking information on the sexual preferences of White House staff members is particularly notable. And when they ask Moyers about it, he says, memory is unclear after so many years. Ha, ha, ha. Hey, Bill. Hey, Bill. Bill, even the lefties are on to you. Bill, you're no good. Bill, I've always known you were no good. I always called you a baggy-eyed Bolshevik. Have a nice trip to the dustbin of history, Bill. You've been outed for what you are. And my friends, that concludes this hour of the Savage Nation. I think it was worth your listening time. And remember my talk about left or right, it doesn't matter where the dictatorship comes from. All you got to know is that the end result is the same. They want absolute and total power over business, the economy, and the people. Obama, in less than a month, has achieved 2/3 of a dictatorship, and you don't even know it. You don't even know it, because we've been taken off the soul standard. Just as the dollar was taken off the gold standard by Nixon, you've been taken off the soul standard.
Better.